This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
It's time for the sports update from One Bills Drive. The 2020 NFL Pro Bowl takes place this Sunday at 3 o'clock on ESPN, where the NFC and AFC will face off. The Bills are represented by three Pro Bowlers this year: cornerback Tre'Davious White, linebacker Tremaine Edmonds, and wide receiver Andre Roberts. After 16 seasons in the NFL, all with the Giants, Eli Manning officially announced his retirement at a press conference this morning. Manning, who had 234 regular season starts and two Super Bowl MVPs, stated he did not seriously consider playing with another team in 2020. Co-owner John Mara noted that Manning will always be the ultimate Giant, and the franchise will immediately induct him into the team's Ring of Honor next season and retire Eli's number 10 jersey. Coach Ed Orgeron and LSU have agreed to a six-year contract extension through the 2026 season that is valued at more than $42 million. Orgeron led the Tigers to a 42-25 win over Clemson in the College Football National Championship playoff earlier this month for the school's first title since 2007. He was named the winner of the 2019 Paul Bear Bryant Coach of the Year Award last week. The NHL All-Star Skills Challenges takes place tonight at 8 o'clock. Sabre center Jack Eichel will participate in the NHL Fastest Skater Competition in his third appearance at the NHL All-Star Weekend. Eichel will play with the Atlantic Division tomorrow at 8:15 against the Metropolitan Division. New this year at the 2020 Honda All-Star Game, there will be an elite women's 3-on-3 event with the American All-Stars facing off against the Canadian All-Stars tonight at 9:30 o'clock. Hockey Hall of Famers Cammy Granato and Jane Hefford will coach the two teams. And now we have with us Bobby Stroop, who is the APEC founder and director, Accelerate Performance Enhancement Center director, and he's directed human performance systems for 20 years. He also trains Patrick Mahomes, which is pretty awesome. Bobby, thanks for being on with us today. We appreciate it, and we're excited to get to talk to you about Patrick Mahomes, his success, and what you do in the combine with several different athletes.
Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to be on. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Bobby. First thing I got to ask you, and for most people, they know all these guys train in the offseason. I know you also have a handful of 49er athletes that you train, a lot of pro athletes. In Patrick Mahomes' case, you had him since he was, what, in fourth grade or 9 years old or something like that. What are some of the and you're getting guys ready for the combine as well. What are some of the things that have changed in your 20 years in your training methods and the priorities you set for your athletes?
That's a great question, Steve. I think it's more like what has stayed the same. Really, it's such an evolving space as far as sports medicine, health, and performance. And the way we approach things now is it's a lot more balanced. I mean, when 20 years ago, it's more about what can you do to get someone faster, or what can you do to get someone to this end result. And now there's so many more things that we can take into account and objectively measure and monitor as far as long-term implications of plyometrics and volume and load. And you see the trends in the NBA and what they're doing to preserve health and long-term performance. And we're just learning a lot more about how indirectly training certain things can elevate performance on the field. And I think that just becomes more and more of a part of our program. And funny enough, even in the combine process, you'd think it'd be more about numbers and testing, but a lot of these guys just haven't felt good since high school. So getting them back to that point is really become a huge part of our job, whereas in the past it was not.
So you've worked with Patrick Mahomes since fourth grade. You know him probably better than a lot of people. How did that relationship come about, and when did you really start to see talent in the quarterback?
So having a kid at fourth grade, I mean, I think anybody would tell you that it's just important that they have fun. And, we're crawling, we're moving and playing, and if you think you have standouts at that age, I think it's a strange thing. But, I mean, you know, Patrick was just like another kid. I mean, yeah, his father had a professional career, and he's got great family surrounding him. But it wasn't really until middle school and high school that you started to see that there were some things that were interesting about Patrick in the way that he solved problems athletically. And to speak specifically to that, he's very sudden. His reaction speed was incredible. He had a lot of perceptual abilities that you would typically call intangibles, but we quickly found that he could expand and grow in those things and in those spaces. And while he wasn't, you know, really a vertical jump 40 time, you know, he wasn't a classic strength conditioning standout, you could see a lot of brilliance in the way that he went about doing things. And he started to stand out, you know, in a lot of sports, the older he got, by just the way that he played with just a tremendous amount of creative freedom and just a unique style of play in really every sport that he did.
Yeah, I got to ask you about that, too. You say it's a lot more balanced now in the training where you expand. It's not just about making a guy faster or stronger, but it's about balanced in your training. The core muscles have elevated in their importance than they were decades ago. And you talk about Patrick Mahomes and whatever sport he played. How big a proponent are you of having kids not specialize in a sport, but playing more than one sport? Is that a plus for you, a minus for you? Is it necessary, not necessary? What are your thoughts on young kids who are trying to just hone in on one sport? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think overall it's a good thing, but it's just like anything else. You know, you've got people that will take that and say, well, great, I'm going to play all the sports all the time. So I just want to be clear, and what I'm not advocating for is that your kid play on three baseball teams at the same time that he's playing on a basketball team. Or,
right,
you know, during football season, I don't think it's great to be on two other select teams. Or, you know, when you're playing baseball for your school, I don't think it's great to be playing AAU basketball. Like, this is a problem. So I think sometimes it's just like anything else. People are choosing a narrative and saying this is good, and then using it in a way that I don't think is best for athletic development. But even more importantly, it's not best for their long-term joint health. It's not best for their psychological approach to sport and just their body, period. So while I am a proponent of and an advocate for multiple sports and playing multiple sports, and honestly, doing that as long as you can. I don't like specialization before 17 years old. You know, there's a dark side of that, too.
We're on with Bobby Stroup. He's the founder and president of Athlete Performance Enhancement Center in Tyler, Texas. Speaking of staying healthy and being healthy, Patrick Mahomes went down this season with that knee injury. He could have missed quite a long time, possibly even a season-ending injury, depending on how bad it actually was. It's usually a 3 to 5 week recovery for that knee injury, that kneecap. But he only missed 2 weeks, and he attributes being able to come back so fast, partly because of you, how you were able to help him. When did that start? Is a lot of that help in the off season when you were training guys to be able to sustain injuries, and that you're growing strength in certain areas of your body so that you can play through an entire season and you can have the wherewithal to go through some wear and tear in the season?
Well, first of all, I appreciate him attributing that to it, but I'll have to be the first to say that I don't believe you can prevent injuries, but you can help reduce them, and you can also set up the body in a way that it recovers more quickly from them. And, look, he's got an incredible support system around him. And I think that support system has a lot to do with how quickly he got back on. His medical team with the Chiefs, they're one of the best, if not the best, in the NFL. You know, the way he trained this offseason, definitely our theme was resilience. So putting him in awkward positions, making him be comfortable in uncomfortable positions, that's an approach and a theory that we've always had to prepare guys for contact, to prepare guys for things that they need to do. And if you look at Patrick's game, he really is unorthodox in his approach, and so you've got to prepare him to be able to produce power from these awkward positions. And so while we do train for someone to be robust, and in particular for Patrick to be resilient, there's a lot of people to credit for this, none more than Patrick and his professionalism in this process when dealt with those things. But Rick Buckhalter and Julie, up there with the Chiefs, their medical staff, they've just done a fine job. And Patrick took it seriously, and he gets sleep, and he lives right. So there's a lot of factors there. I'm lucky and blessed to be associated with it. But yeah, I can't take credit for that. I can tell you that.
No, I know. I'm back a long time ago when I trained and I was in the gym all the time and was training with guys. You kind of get to know each other pretty well, and I'm sure you and Patrick have a relationship that's pretty long and deep. I got to ask you this. We all watched him go through last year's AFC Championship game, not ever get a chance in overtime to touch the football. And I know when he came back and started training for this season and their run to the Super Bowl this year, he probably had a little bit of a different attitude than he had in years prior. Can you speak to that and what you saw in Patrick after just falling short of the Super Bowl last year and how it motivated this last offseason?
Yeah, I think every offseason is different, and I think NBA players do it the best. They want to add in different skill sets every offseason, and then every year they have more of a diverse set of tools to attack people in the way they game plan them. And I've always felt that way about preparing athletes in any sport. But Patrick, you know, the first season going in with the Chiefs, it was all about, you know, win the locker room, be a great teammate, prepare to be the starter, show them that this matters to you. Learn everything you can from Alex, and that was just a great situation. The next year it was, all right, they don't know what's coming, let's bring it. You know, let's show everything we can. And then the shift came all the way around to just winning, flat out winning. I mean, the only goal this year was to win the Super Bowl. And with that goal in mind, a lot of things shift to the front. And we knew that there's going to be game plans that we're not going to be able to foreshadow. And he's got to be ready to be mobile. He's got to be ready to take the hits and be resilient. And he's prepared that way. Who knows what's going to happen in the Super Bowl? These are two great teams with great staffs and great players, and anything can happen. But he's more prepared this year, and that's with intent, and that was tactical and on purpose from his part.
You trained several prospects leading up until the combine and the draft. You're probably getting quite busy with that, actually, with the Senior Bowl going on right now and the combine ahead at the end of February. So what's a typical training day like for an NFL prospect? And Steve and I were talking about this a little bit earlier in that a lot of these prospects, these juniors and seniors, have been going since the beginning of their training camp in August, and they'll go all the way through their first season in the NFL before they really get a break. So what's a typical day like for you when you're training for the combine?
Matty, that's a great point what you bring up, in that it's almost like a rookie baseball player that's just, they're at such a disadvantage in this process. So, you know, we go off 10-day training blocks. So every day is a little different for 10 days that we train, and then it flips. So not every Monday is the same, not every Tuesday, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, basically they're going to come in a normal day. They come in at 7:30. They eat breakfast. They're going to go to our soft tissue team, which is going to work on joint mobilizations, priming their body next. Then they're going to go to a personalized fuse, which is a proactive therapy script made just for them and the things that we found that they need for their body. After that, we always go to movement. So whatever the speed and power focus is of the day, that's going to be first. Once we finish with that session, you know, you're already 2.5 hours in. They're going to get some amino acids. They're going to get a little bit of supplementation, and then we do a power development session. Then we follow that with a strength and a conditioning session. Then they're going to eat lunch. After lunch, they have a flexibility session with sports stretch. Then we've got multiple different disciplines for recovery. From far near an infrared sauna to light therapy to pneumatic massage systems. I mean, you name it. So these guys have full days. I mean, by the time they're done, it's 3 o'clock, 7 to 3 with no breaks. There's a lot going on. But we've just found that through this process, we have to condition them to what these bowl games are going to be like, what the combine experience is going to be like in a pro day. So it's a lot, but It's a lot of fun as well.
What's the most common lesson you feel you have to teach most of the young guys who come to you? I'm not talking about the middle schoolers and high school. I'm talking about the pro guys or the college prospects getting ready for the draft or just into the NFL. What's the most common lesson you have to teach young guys when they come to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that I feel like it's pretty consistent. And the common message is this: just because it doesn't hurt you or doesn't feel like you're grinding doesn't mean it's not incredibly valuable and something you need to really focus and do at a high level. These guys have been conditioned, a lot of them, through college or high school or just their own disposition, that things have to be hard all the time, and that's how you earn your way in this world. But what they quickly find in this process is if you focus on different articulations with your ankle and how your foot is mobilizing before the workout, or take the time to do things that actually feel good and actually focus on them with the same intent and energy as you would a 40 start or your position work, then there's a real shift in professionalism that gives these guys a mindset for a good career.
You train players on both rosters in the Super Bowl, the 49ers and the Chiefs, Solomon Thomas, a couple other guys, Patrick Mahomes. Can you explain to the fan kind of the work that goes into what these players have been able to do and where they've been able to get with it all starting in the offseason preparing to the next season? Because I'm sure you're there when it all starts for that upcoming season, and you get to see just every single day the work that these players put in to be able to hopefully get to the point where a couple of your guys are at right now preparing for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them, it starts in their bye week the season before. They come in and we just talk about everything that they wanted to feel better the next season and what do they need to be better. And you know, that's how I met Solomon. Is he wasn't happy with how his career started off. And last year in his bye week, he came down and we made a list. And there's some things medically that, you know, I'm not going to talk about. But I will say that he had some stuff to make some decisions on. And I think you noticed that now they've got depth there, but there's a difference. And in the playoffs, he's playing well. And obviously with Patrick, we have such a long relationship that, you know, it's almost just continuous as far as communication and what we're doing. But, yeah, I mean, people don't see it. These guys, they come in, and this is their livelihood. So every day they check in, they go to work. You know, Richie James is a return guy for the 49ers and a great receiver. He was a long-shot guy. You know, he was a quarterback in high school. I mean, the things he's doing, it wasn't just a given. And the people that actually have a sustainable career, and I mean sustainable beyond 18 months is what I would consider in the NFL, you know, they do these things right. They take them seriously. Nobody's taking 4 months off. I mean, there can be some unique people here and there, but you know, you take away that top 5% of people that can get away with it. You have to work. You know, you have to earn your way in the NFL almost every day year round, and these guys do that. And I'm proud of all of them in this game. And I want the best for all of them.
One last thing from me, Bobby. I got to just say this. This combine that comes up, and I remember, and I can see it every year on their faces, and these guys, they show up, and they know it's a little bit like an academic standardized test, you know, where you,
yep.
You know, right? So if you know what's going to be asked, you can kind of get the answers and have it ready. And all these guys know exactly what the combine is going to be asked of them physically, the 40 time, the route running, their hands or arm strength, all this, you know, all these guys have these drills at their fingertips. What's your attitude to these guys about, you know, do you just train for the standardized test or do you continue to hone in on just making them better all around, given the fact that, you know, the emotional stress for these young players is enormous because of all the money and the dreams that they've got tied up into this combine? How do you handle like the emotional preparation and the stress preparation for being there with all these other great athletes and trying to show up big?
Yeah, you nailed it. I the way I tell them to approach it is just like a decathlon. I mean, they have entered into a season of their life where they're a decathlete, and they've got multiple events that they need to do well at. And there's some events that they have to win if they want to be in the point totals. That's kind of how I can communicate this to them so they can visualize it. And unfortunately, football isn't even one of those events right now.
Right.
So, but what we're challenged with is that we still want them to be better at the game of football. So we have to feather that in. I mean, we're not going to just – look, you can get a guy's vertical up in certain ways more from a more advantaged state, but it can put them at a higher risk for injury their rookie season. I mean, I know that. We've unfortunately gone through that in 20 years. And you've got to make conscious decisions on what's most important for guys. High-risk guys versus low-risk guys, projectability, all these things factor in. But, you know, when you're talking about the combine, it is like a standardized test. There are things. Now, this year's different. I don't know if everybody's aware, but in the past, they test these guys at 7 in the morning. And they make them report at 5 a.m. Some mornings 4 a.m. They've got to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning doing interviews. This year, they're moving all the testing, all the TV time, to prime time in the evening. So they're not really giving us a lot of information on their order and how they're going to do things. So this year's going to be a little harder to just have all the answers. I think they're changing things in a positive manner, but there's going to be some more true results, if that makes any sense, this year.
Bobby, thanks for joining us. We do appreciate your time. Definitely enjoy watching the Super Bowl with some of your players playing in that in just a short week away. And I'm sure you'll be pretty busy coming up with the combine and all the training that you have.
Congratulations, Bobby.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And, man, it's been awesome seeing your team improve as well. And Josh Allen should be mentioned as one of the most improved players in the NFL. You guys got an exciting future. And appreciate y'all having me on today.
All right. Thanks, Bobby.
Yeah,
appreciate
no problem.
It. Good luck.
That's Bobby Stroup. He's the founder and president of Athlete Performance Enhancement Center out of Tyler, Texas. And he brought up a good point. There's some changes right now in the combine coming up, which begins on February 23rd. Another thing that's going to be different this year is usually there are 60 interviews. So these teams can have 60 interviews with guys. Those are 15-minute interviews. This year it is being dropped down to 45 interviews, and those will be 18-minute interviews. So what that means to your casual fan is you get to spend some more time with less guys, and that makes the Senior Bowl even more important this year. So you have to believe that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean and some of the scouts were definitely interviewing guys who they think may go middle round, because you don't have as many of your per se stars at the Senior Bowl because some of those guys dropped out this year, but they are definitely taking the time to interview players in the Senior Bowl because they will have less in the combine.
And what happens is it starts on Sunday, February 23rd, and the tight ends, quarterbacks, and wide receivers will show up, and then the next day the place kickers, special teams guys, offensive lines, and running backs will show up. Those are return guys. The special teams guys show up on Monday. Tuesday, the defensive line and linebackers, and Wednesday, the DBs show up. And there's only 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all four of those groups are there all at once, and then it trails off the same way. Saturday, the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends are all gone. The next day, the kickers, special teams, offensive line, running backs are all gone. The defensive line, linebackers leave the next day, and then Monday, March 2nd, finally the defensive backs leave. So they're kind of overlap all these guys, and they stagger them, and they stair-step them through the week so that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all whatever hundred, couple hundred of them are there all at once, and then they stair-step them out of there. And you're right. The schedule and how they run things, it is a little bit of a livestock show where these guys show up and they get their pictures taken. Mm-hmm. They get
measured. They go in for height and weight.
They go for their physical. And then you go for their physical. It's not just one doctor. I mean, it's like
they're going into your medical history.
There's a bunch of doctors there, and they all have to examine them. They do blood work, the whole nine yards. I mean, they really give these guys a health check. And rightfully so. If they're going to pay some of these guys seven figures, they want to make sure they're healthy, particularly if they're athletes. So you can imagine the extensive nature of the medical interviews these guys go through. And then let alone, we talked to Bobby Stroup. He said, well, none of this has to do with actual throwing the football or playing football. Mm-hmm. They might throw some catches, you know, throw and catch, and that's it.
And it's funny to think about, to your point of how it is, the combine is not – there's so many drills, whether it's the 40-yard dash or the cone drill or when you're getting into height and measurement and weight and before the draft and before you get to see the product on the field. So many people will obsess over that his hand is this big or his three cone drill was terrible.
Right.
How is that going to work out once he gets onto the field? But it's interesting the training that goes into that, that you have to train for things like the three-cone drill, and you have to train for the 40-yard dash, and you have to train to be able to showcase how high you can jump and things like that.
Yeah, and it's all about measurables, you know, how high you are, how tall you are, how heavy you are, and how strong you are, and literally what your body looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Do you fit the numbers that you put out there? And there, every year there are guys who don't look the part, but test the part. And then you start to get into, are we really sold on this guy? What, you know, that kind of thing is, he's got this, like DK Metcalf, great wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks. His three-cone drill was horrible. So everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's got some issues. Well, yeah, the guy turns out he's one of the best rookie receivers in the league, and he kills it. 40
was pretty good.
Right, so his 40 was really good. So you got all this stuff where they have holes in their game or their physical abilities, but they measure them, and then people start to react accordingly or overreact accordingly. That's the interesting part of the whole process.
How have you seen the combine evolve since you have been in football?
Well, I did not get invited. My year, when I came out in 1985, was, I think, the second, maybe the third year of the combine. And I didn't get invited.
Did you have a pro day, though?
Yeah. Well, no. Pro days didn't exist either. The way it worked back then was I'd get a call from the football office at Northwestern University and say, hey, the scout from
is in town.
This guy's going to be in town Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, you need to be there and be ready. And I'd be like, okay. And that was it. You know, he'd come in and say, well, I go, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And he'd say, okay, today we want you to do a three-cone shuffle. We want you to do a 40. We want your vertical, height, weight, your hand sizes, and I want to see you bench or something else, or whatever. And this scout was, I'd say, okay. So then another scout would come in. We'd do some of the same stuff and some different stuff whenever that other scout came in. So you had to stay ready all the time. And it was completely different than it is now, yeah.
I worked at Tennessee before I got this job, and there were always scouts in and out of that building.
Sure.
Throughout the season, practices, games. I mean, guys, scouts would come in on Thursday or Friday, so they would be able to watch practice, and then they'd be able to see the game, meet with some players, things like that. And then the bigger schools host the pro days. And so Tennessee would always have a pro day, and your guys who didn't get invited to the combine, that would be their big day. And then you'd see a lot of also players from smaller schools travel to the bigger schools'
right.
pro days. So you have all these Tennessee players, but you then have some smaller Tennessee schools that would be coming to pro day.
Right.
So it's
kids from Mississippi Valley State going to Ole Miss's pro day and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty common.
It's a big event.
A huge event.
Oh yeah. We have a lot more to come. We're going to get into some true false coming up. We're going to take a short break, but we still got half an hour left. So don't go anywhere. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Live, One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Welcome back into One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Maddie Glab here with Steve Tasker. We don't have too much longer in this show. Friday. It's a great day.
It is a great day.
The weekend's nice day. Coming up. Senior Bowl, Pro Bowl this weekend. We got football on TV the weekend after that. Super Bowl. It's a good time to be alive.
Well, not as good as it was, you know, we were in the playoffs, but
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Hey, we have 3 guys in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, 3 guys.
Baby steps. Next year.
Yeah.
I believe it. All right, we've got a Twitter question. Give us 3 things the Bills must do this offseason.
All right, here we go. From Jim, he says, a tall wide receiver, a pass rusher, and get Derrick Henry from the Titans. Get Derrick Henry from the Titans.
Can that happen?
It could. I mean, the guy's a free agent.
This is true.
If we get him for the right price, bring him in.
Why
I'm
not?
All about it. If he wants to play here, I'm not paying the guy $15 million, though. If you can forget it.
That's one thing we've been talking about all show. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott are not going
to
overpay for players.
Paper guys. So I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
Tall wide receiver, I like that.
Yeah,
Pass rusher game. Derrick Henry might be a little hard.
Obviously, if he's going to be a tall, he's got to be productive on all these guys, right? Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Here we go. There's number the last one on the tweet sheet from Jeremiah. Give us three things the Bills must do this offseason. Jeremiah says, get a big, fast, and physical wideout. Number two, couple of pass rushers, solidify both offensive tackle positions. There you go. That's right. You know, they're about there to the point where they're going to have to extend Deion Dawkins. Mm-hmm. Tremaine Edmonds is eligible for extension,
and so is
Trey White's getting there, mm-hmm. and so is Matt Milano. So all those guys are kind of going to be up. Now, there's no real urgency for any of those guys, but you need to get them done at some mm-hmm. point, right?
Definitely. Yeah. They're pretty great players, so yeah. I'd love to have them on the Bills for years to come. We have a phone call. Tom from Amherst is going to be on the line. He has something to say about some of our corners and what we can do to get better at that position.
Tom, you on there? Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, guys? I talked to you on Wednesday, Steve, about what Maddie talked to you about earlier in the show about a replacement for Lorenzo Alexander.
Right.
But my corner question for you guys, we seem to have a lot of nickel corners on a roster, and what would you think about drafting a cornerback complement Tre'Davious White, number one?
And we were thinking about that today.
We were talking about it.
I mean,
No.
We weren't talking about it on the show. This was off the show.
Right.
Sorry, guys.
If there's a good corner out there, I'm all about it. I get it. I mean, we've got needs everywhere, and we've already got Tre'Davious White, who's all pro, and that, which is, you know.
I know. I know. He is. He's great.
And but it sure certainly takes the heat off your pass rush when the guys are covered up anyway.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the personality of the Bills' defense this year was that, you know, their secondary and linebacking core in space were so good, the D-line, you know, just had to make sure the ball came out and not have a quarterback snap off a 35-yard run. And it seemed, obviously, they were really good. I think that's a pretty good philosophy to keep. Edge rushers are great, but what do you do when you're playing Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson? And they just, or Russell Wilson, they just bob and weave and run away from your edge rusher who beat their offensive tackle right away. Now you still got time to mm-hmm. throw. So if you've got edge rushers who are disciplined, stay in their lane and keep the quarterback in the pocket and close that down to where the ball has to come out, he's not going to be able to run with it as often as he would like. But they're covered up in the back end because you did draft another corner. You may have another top two or three defense again next year, and that'd be pretty good. So I'm not – I hear you, Tom. Oh. Maybe it'll work. I wouldn't be surprised. Nothing surprised me in the draft. If they can get to a point – the philosophy is this. You want to get to the point where the draft is where you can take whatever player is there that is the absolute best guy left, no matter what position. And the Bills do a pretty good job of getting mm-hmm. to that spot every draft.
Yeah, definitely. One of the mock drafts has a corner going at number 22, which is the Bills' first-round pick. That's Jalen Johnson out of Utah. So there's definitely been some mock drafts that have had corners either at their first pick or their second pick in the second round. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Thanks for the call. We're going to take another one. Jim is on the line. Jim, what do you think?
Are you talking to me from Marilla?
Yes, we are. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I had to shut the radio off. Yeah, you just talked about exactly what I wanted to ask about. Everybody talks about picking the next best available player in the draft. Can you tell me what criteria they use, what system, what stats, what information they use to figure out what's the next best available player? Because you look at it, linebackers versus cornerbacks versus running backs versus wide receivers. What system do they use to determine that?
It's a great question because you're right. You're comparing apples to oranges with players who play completely different positions and different sides of the football. And when it comes down to say, do you want to take this offensive tackle or do you want to take that cornerback? I think what they do is, what a lot of that has to do is, at that point, Jim, I think it comes down to a gut call, and it also has to do with who's on your roster. Which of those positions do you need it most? Which one is the shallowest? Which one would you like to have bolstered more than the other one? Like, so for instance, if you're not that confident in the roster of tackles, offensive tackles you have, maybe you do take the tackle instead of the corner, or vice versa. If you've got corners, but you really think you could upgrade them and get better if you take the corner over the tackle, that's the one you go to. But it comes down to when push comes to shove, it's a judgment call on which one you need the most. And if it comes down to two different guys at two different positions, it's which position is of best most need.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so best available on your roster. And they're also looking, this staff does a great job and these scouts do a great job to look beyond the stats, beyond what they do on the field. They're looking for off the field things too. They're looking for the intangibles, what these players can add into the locker room. This team and Brandon Bean has been very public about, hey, sometimes we're going to pass up on guys who may be the best available, but we don't want to take them for X, Y, Z because of off the field reasons.
Right. What else you got, Jim? All right, Jim's gone. But, yeah, that's a great point for you, too. There's a lot of criteria that goes in and how much you weigh what those guys bring on and off the field. Does this, as a corner, have the ability, like Tre'Davious White, kind of elevate the guys around him with his attitude, with his energy, with his positivity, with his character, with his work ethic? Does he elevate the other cornerbacks in the room to play better, to be pros, to work hard at it off the field and away from the field, and to stay committed when nobody's watching? Certainly an offensive lineman has that ability because they're in a room all the time with those other five or six or seven guys. They spend a lot of time talking and communicating, and they need to play together. So he'll have a much more opportunity to elevate their play if he's that kind of guy. That goes a long way with this general manager and head coach and this culture of what kind of guy they are.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that would be the tipping point in the process of when we get down to the draft, who we're going to take which guy. Maybe that's as much as what position they play, that stuff.
And this team, the players in this locker room have said a lot of times, and I think Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, have said this, we feel like we're a bunch of misfits that have been able to come together and make something. Teams let us walk. Teams didn't want us, but now we're here in Buffalo where staff wants us and they know how to use us in the right way to get the full potential out of us. So they may pass on these great players, but they're taking players that they believe will fit into the system that they have in place here.
Right, and they also there's also everything goes into this. There's a million things of intangibles and gut opinions and experiences that go into the evaluation of these players that they don't know about. There's also one that goes in that says, listen, this guy, like, for instance, Josh Allen, there might be a guy who was more polished coming out or ran a different kind of offense that was more attractive to the pro game or played at a higher level, whatever. But they look at a guy like Josh and say, that guy's physical top end is way better than anybody else. I mean, we think, and as a coaching staff, we think we have a plan of bringing that out of him and getting him to play mentally with mental acuity that his physical acuity would support. You know, so they think they're going to get a much better guy down the road if they can develop him, and that goes into the thinking as well at every position, not just the quarterback.
Yeah, so much goes into these decisions, from watching film to putting guys on lists to evaluating that to interviewing. I mean, it's a year-round process that does not stop for the scouting department here with the Buffalo Bills. It's quite incredible. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what we have learned. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is the Buffalo Bills Radio. It's time for What Have We Learned, brought to you by Skyworks. Skyworks, the official construction equipment rental company of the Buffalo Bills. Greg Cosell was on our show earlier, and he had a lot to say on what makes Patrick Mahomes such an elite talent.
He's a super freak thrower, Matty. Not many guys throw the ball like that. And the quarterback position in the NFL still starts with the way a guy throws it. And he's a great, great thrower. He can throw with velocity. He can throw with touch. He can throw from, as we say, different platforms. He can throw it from the pocket. He can throw it well on the move. His ball placement is very, very good. You don't see him miss too many throws where you go, oh, man, he missed that one. His ball placement is usually very precise. So as a passer, there's really nothing he's missing. And then you add in the movement element, the second reaction ability. He's just got a knack, because there are times he kind of plays the game loose and you almost feel like he's undisciplined, but then he makes plays that way. There's a playmaking dimension to his game.
We also had Bobby Stroop on. He has worked with Patrick Mahomes since he was in fourth grade, and he had something to say about his unique style of play on the field.
It wasn't really until middle school and high school that you started to see that there were some things that were interesting about Patrick in the way that he solved problems athletically. And to speak specifically to that, he's very sudden. His reaction speed was incredible. He had a lot of perceptual abilities that you would typically call intangibles, but we quickly found that he could expand and grow in those things and in those spaces. And while he wasn't, really a vertical jump 40 time, he wasn't a classic strength conditioning standout, you could see a lot of brilliance in the way that he went about doing things. And he started to stand out, in a lot of sports the older he got, by just the way that he played, with just a tremendous amount of creative freedom and just a unique style of play.
That is what we learned from today's show. Steve, you going to watch the Senior Bowl or the Pro Bowl this weekend?
I will probably be busy.
Probably be busy.
I may turn the...
Too cool,
I don't know,
for school.
It does not... No. I'll just say no. I'm not going to watch the Pro Bowl.
Haters in the club.
I'm not a hater. I got things I got to do that are fun.
Okay.
I mean, no.
No.
No. I can't do it. I might watch the NHL All-Star game.
Okay.
The hockey All-Star game.
Okay, that's on
that
too.
Might be on my list. But for me, my weekends are too precious to be sitting there watching a scrimmage.
You love the game, though.
I do love the game. That is not the game. Let's be real, right? I mean, come on. Are you going to watch it?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Pro Bowl. I will watch the Pro Bowl.
You
on some
know
of
how
it.
That goes.
Hopefully Trey White, Tremaine Edmonds.
I would love it if both
Andre
those guys
Roberts,
had a pick
yeah.
six. And then stubbed their toe and sat down for the rest of the day.
And I'll be interested to see the stats that come out of the Senior Bowl and kind of the buzz that comes out of that game, because that'll be fun to see.
I'll be interested to see how it goes with the guys who light it up over there, who do well. Jimmy Garoppolo is a prime example. Made his bones in those games.
Yes,
and
he
now
did.
Now look at him. He's making $30 million a year. Good for him.
Yes, he did.
All right.
Well, that's it. That's our show. Thanks to our friends in the control room, George, Jeff, Thomas, Kelly, JJ, Kevin, James, and our producer, Jay Harris. We hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you next week on Monday, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.